The Business on RT Radio 1 with Ulster Bank. For when you're keen to know what Brexit means for your business, visit ulsterbank.ie/Brexit.
But first, the builders returned to work this week. It's a sector our first guest is very familiar with. Sean Brett is the founder and chief executive of Steeltech, a company which designs and manufactures sheds and garages. It employs 170 people and has a turnover of 20 million euro. I caught up with Sean earlier and I first asked him, what sort of an impact has COVID-19 had on his business so far?
Well, I suppose, like everything in life, I'm the optimist and I always see a problem as an opportunity. So we're looking for opportunities and the home office is the obvious one. So straight away, we're starting to see an awful lot of demand for home offices. Business in general, everything came to a standstill about 7 weeks ago, but we have sales have reopened on Monday of this week. So we've had the busiest week ever. So
you had the busiest week ever when you reopened. Was that a sort of a pent-up demand or was that something that surprised you?
No, it didn't surprise us because we did keep the phones and online chat and stuff like that open. We were continuously doing videos and that kind of thing. So there was a lot of, I mean, we're having 5,000 hits on average every single day on the website. So people were keen to buy a shed. And of course, everyone's out in the garden gardening now. So they're finding there's a space there and everybody needs a shed. So we were kind of expecting it.
Now, when it comes to your own background, you were brought up, Sean, working on the family farm.
Yeah, I mean, I was brought up in Mayo on a small 15-acre farm. So from a business point of view, I see every farmer as a businessman in his own way. So that's where we would have got our first lessons in business, really.
And your parents were fairly astute at business, were they?
Yeah, well, my father was a hard-working farmer, you know, and my mother then, she was very entrepreneurial and very creative. So with 15 acres, there's not much you can do with it. So my father started a pig farm, which went quite well. And then my mother, she enjoyed gardening and we had two grandmothers living in the house. So I often say three women in the wood kitchen isn't a good idea. So she took to gardening and then she decided to start a garden centre, which went extremely well. So there was great examples there of business and entrepreneurship from a very early age.
So were you interested in the gardening side of things or were you more interested in the pig farming side?
Well, not the pig farming anyways, but I was always interested in anything that made money.
You actually were loaned the money to get your own piglets, were you?
Yeah, I suppose that was our first...
At an early age.
Our first business lesson really was at age 7, where myself and my brother, who was a year older, we were basically given money to buy our first piglets. So they were fed and brought up with the rest of the piglets. And when they went to the factory, we got paid for that piglet, which we returned the money we borrowed. And with the profit, we bought another one, and then two, and then three. So by age 13, we had, both myself and my brother, had quite a successful little pig farm of our own.
But I suppose it was a good grounding in the basics of business. You had to pay back the money you originally got for the piglet. You decided to do the sensible thing and use some of the profit to buy another one.
Yeah, well, we were encouraged, obviously, but we weren't given the piglet. You know, it was very important that we were given the loan and we repaid that loan. So we learned them lessons up to, as I say, the age of 13. And the thing about pigs is you got to feed them every single day of the year and they make a lot of noise and they're smelly and I really didn't like pigs. But so at age 13, then I remember I sold the piglets and decided to get into the horticultural business. I bought 18 apple trees, so that was the second business. I probably should have stayed with the pigs, though, because the apple trees never produced any apples. So that didn't work out
too
well.
So that was an early lesson in a startup going wrong.
Well, it was the first of many, indeed.
Now, you left school at 14. You didn't enjoy school particularly, did you?
No, school was tough, you know. I was dyslexic in school, so I struggled to know what was going on. And I basically was down at the back of the class. I was probably one of the messers. And the teachers really they weren't too fond of me. So I couldn't wait to get out of there.
So after you left, you got your first job was in a garage.
Yeah, I left at 14. You know, I basically went, I like cars, so I went door to door to all the garages just asking for a job. And eventually one of them gave me a job. So I tried that out for a couple of years.
Right. And then you went to London, you put in a stint in London, and someone like yourself who has a lot of get up and go, a lot of energy, you sound like a guy who's full of ideas about things. Many people would have perhaps got a job and stayed in London. You decided to come back home.
I did. Well, I worked in London for a couple of years, and I stayed in a house with a bunch of lads, and I was the only one working in the house. Everybody else was taking it easy. And I never really settled into London because there was a big drinking culture, just drinking and not working and going to the pub in the middle of the day and this kind of thing. And so that side of it didn't appeal to me. And then after a while, I came back to Ireland for a weekend and I said, you know what, I'm going to stay here for a while.
And when you got back, were you in a hurry to find work, or did you want to take your time about things, take a bit of time out?
Well, I suppose I arrived back to Mayo and there wasn't much happening back then in Mayo, so I headed for Galway because Galway is, of course, a great city. And I did. I immediately tried to find a job, but back in the 80s there was high unemployment, and with very little skills or education, it wasn't easy to get a job. So for the first year, I remember the weather was really good, so I spent a lot of time on the beach and did a lot of socialising. So I drew unemployment benefit for a year. So you could say I took a year out there. And then, of course, accidentally, I started my first business in Galway because I had a girlfriend at the time, and I met her one evening and she said she got me a job painting a house. So didn't know much about painting, but I was a fast learner.
And you were painting houses, and were you good at it? Did you enjoy it, or did you want to get to a point where you'd have a bit of a business and others would do the painting and you'd do the sales? Or
yeah, I mean, sales and marketing was always my strong point. So while I didn't really know the first thing about painting, and I remember wallpapering as well, the first room I put the wallpaper on it, I thought it looked fine. I went home and I got a phone call from the lady that evening where it all fell off. So then I bought a book on how to wallpaper, but I could get work. You know, I had friends who were qualified painters and they couldn't get work, but I could always get work because I understood sales, marketing, that kind of thing. So I was able to get work, and in no time at all, I had quite a few people working for me. So it was really about making money, you know, and doing a good job as best you could at a fair price. And that works, you know.
Now, you got into selling coal, which in a roundabout way began a different journey that sort of ended up with steel tech. But tell me about the coal.
Yeah, I mean, after a number of years, I was getting tired of painting. I really got sick of it. And I was looking for something else to do. And I seen these lads going door to door selling coal, and it seemed quite simple. So I basically, the height of my research really was going into the local wholesalers and saying, how much is a ton of coal? So I quickly realised you're making €4 or €5 on a bag of coal. So I thought, how hard can that be? I bought a truck, got my load of coal, and off I went. Now, of course, it wasn't that simple. I'll always remember my first evening was a Wednesday evening. I went into a place called Caslon Heights in Galway, which has 220 houses, and just knocking on doors. I then quickly realised that 6 days of the week there were 6 other coal lorries going in there. But after 2 years, every single one of them was gone. I had taken the whole estate. So they were all basically selling coal, but I was looking for new customers. So I had a different approach. And again, the sales and marketing is what really stood to me.
What did you do? How did you get in there and the other 6 were gone?
The first thing I'd do was I'd get lots of leaflets printed and business cards and look like a professional, always having a clean truck, proper signage, that kind of thing. But I'd knock at the door, say, introduce myself, say hi away, and have a conversation and say, look, I'm in your area every Wednesday evening and we're giving away free bill of briquettes with every bag of coal for the month of September. And the word free is the number one word in marketing, and there's a reason for that. It really does work, you know. So little things like that, whereas my competitors were just knocking on the door saying, do you want coal? That was the height of their marketing. So it was getting a foot in the door and getting a new customer.
And then you started, people were getting rid of their old oil tanks, steel tanks, and they were replacing them with plastic ones. And you said you'd take them away.
Yeah, basically when we'd be bringing coal into people's gardens, you'd see this old square steel oil tank thrown in the garden where they had replaced it because it might have a pinhole and it was leaking. So they would get the new plastic oil tank. So we'd just simply say to the woman of the house, do you want that oil tank taken away? She'd be delighted to get rid of it. So we get paid to take it away and ended up with a whole load of these square steel oil tanks in the garden the following summer. So myself and the lads were looking at them saying, what will we do with these? So we came up with the brilliant idea to recycle them and turn them into coal bunkers. So it was simple enough. They were a square shape. They were the perfect shape. Simply cut them with the angle grinder, put a lid on the top and a hatch on the bottom, and sell them the following winter. So went extremely well. So that was our first venture into the steel business.
When you were offering to take them away, and you would have got paid a few quid to take them away, had you any idea what you were going to do with them? Or was this sort of, look, we'll get a few quid to take them away And it'll also keep me well in with the customer base. It's all about the customers.
It was all about the customer, and you were providing a service and you were getting paid. And I honestly don't think we had a plan of what we were going to do with them. So it just came to us. Why not? You know, it wasn't rocket science, really. It just made perfect sense.
And it's extraordinary as you talk about the different jobs that you've had and businesses you've set up from such an early age. There's obviously, you're using your imagination a lot in terms of saying, how can we do this differently? How can I beat others? But there's obviously a big work ethic there as well. Where did that come from, Sean, do you think?
I suppose I'd consider in order to be successful in business, you need a couple of things, and creativity is number one, but a work ethic is essential. And we got that growing up on the farm, because at 5 or 6 years of age, when we came home from school, we immediately went out to work. So when you're working, you're brought up with it. It's a natural thing to do, to go to work every single day, and that stays with you for life. So that work ethic is there, and it's been a huge advantage, really, you know. And as I say, the creativity side of it is you're always thinking, looking for the opportunities, and they're there. It's just a matter of spotting them.
So how did Steel Tech then come about?
So I suppose then we're making the steel bunkers, and I noticed a few lads working with me were a lot happier making steel bunkers than selling coal. And I was thinking, you know, what else can we do here? And at the same time, we're bringing coal into people's gardens, putting it into what then would have been timber sheds a lot of the time. And a timber shed is fine, it's a lot cheaper, but within a few weeks of getting a new timber shed, the door mightn't close properly. Within a year or two, it might be leaking, so the quality wouldn't be that great. And I'm thinking, you know, there's got to be a better way. So I suppose we identified a gap in the market there and said, why don't we make a steel shed? And we're having a bit of fun along the way as well, experimenting. So we made our first steel shed and it turned out okay. And, you know, we never looked back. That's 25 years ago.
And you would have started in the Galway area. Obviously, it's nationwide now. And you're also in the British market too.
Yeah, we started, you know, we started in Galway, and then we quickly moved down to Limerick. And then we kind of took it easy because I was enjoying life and I was doing a lot of travel. And, you know, up until 2006, the economy was booming, so money was rolling in the door. We didn't have to do a lot. But I suppose then when the downturn came, we had to relook at things. And I often say I'm at my best when I'm under pressure. So we rapidly expanded then across the country and then into Britain as well. So
you expanded when the recession hit. Many people would have done the opposite. That was fairly gutsy or risky.
It was a very interesting time, because I can remember, as I say, you know, business was so good. We had, dare I say it, become a little bit lazy, because it was too easy to make money. You know, everywhere was booming in 2006 and 2007. And then all of a sudden, I just come into work one day and the lads are saying, look, there's no orders coming in. What are we going to do? So we just went, we did a bit of brainstorming, and we seriously thought about it, and we thought, you know what, we're going to have to take some drastic action here, and we don't want to go broke. But there's one thing for sure, if we go broke, we don't want to go with a small bang, we want to go with a big bang. So we're going to take a gamble here, and we're going to start expanding. And fortunately, it worked out. But again, our competitors, everybody pulled back, and people should never pull back on their sales and marketing, because, you know, you need business. So a lot of people pulled back on that, which I think was a mistake. We did the opposite. And of course, we got great deals around the country getting sites, because there was no one looking for sites. So we were able to rent at very reasonable rates and get great deals on advertising as well, because nobody else was spending money. So that worked out. And all of us, of course, the competitors we had went backwards, fortunately for us. And we rapidly took a large portion of the market there and then.
So when you look at the business, you look at your own work ethic and what you've done. Would you say that money, you seem to be good at making money. Is money a motivating factor for you? And how do you like to spend it when you have some?
I enjoy the business and I'm growing the business. And of course, the team of people around me, I've met some great friends and we've some fantastic people in the company. And yes, I do. I enjoy making money and I enjoy spending. I'm a great spender. There's no doubt about it. Anyone that knows me will tell you that. I'm even a squanderer at times, I've been told. But I like cars and I like holidays and all that kind of thing, you know. So
you have a Lamborghini with an interesting provenance, a background.
Lamborghini would be one of my favourite cars. I mean, it'd be one of those cars you would have a poster in your bedroom as a kid, you know. So to be able to own this car is a it's great to have it, just to look at it, if nothing else. And of course, the one I had, the Lamborghini Murcielago, in my opinion, is the nicest one ever built. And they're rare enough. There's very few of them left in the world because they stopped making them a few years ago. And of course, Lamborghinis nowadays are made by Audi, so I don't consider them a proper Lamborghini. But this right. one, yeah, I mean, the English government
an elderly lady teacher as a previous owner?
No, the previous owner would have been quite a colourful character. He was involved in a different kind of business that wouldn't be entirely legal. So what happens is the British government confiscate a lot of things, toys, watches, cars, whatever, from time to time. So this car came up for auction and I was lucky enough to get it.
You would have got it at a good price in those circumstances.
Well, I did. I mean, it was still an expensive enough car, and to clear it was shocking, painful. But that was worth it. It's a beautiful car.
You've also picked up a few interesting things along the way. You've got some giant Transformers statues outside the office, and you've also bought a motorbike. You bought an old motorbike you bought?
Yeah, well, I was at a Top Gear motor show that had it in Dublin a number of years ago, and I came across this guy, and he was, of all things, selling giant-sized Transformers. It was an interesting story. He had went to a wedding in Thailand, and while he was there, he met some girl who fell madly in love, and her family make these things in the shed out the back. So he got involved in the business, and now they sell them all over the world. It's hugely successful, actually. So I have Bumblebee and Optimus Prime, and I wasn't a fan of Transformers, but I just thought they're made from recycled motorbike parts, and they're beautiful works of art. You know, so I thought they were great. And then, of course, when I watched the movie, I realised it was a Chevrolet Camaro car. So obviously I had to get the car as well. And then there's a monster American monster truck. So I have the truck as well. So I like unusual things, that's for sure. Yeah, but they're gorgeous to look at. And they're a nice attraction to having the different showrooms around the country. So, you know, it keeps the kids busy looking at them or taking photographs while you try and talk their parents into buying a new home office.
And you often give talks in school, and when you look back on your own school experience and you look at the education that you say you got at the kitchen table and from your parents, what do you say to secondary school kids when you talk to them about the future and about work and jobs?
Yeah, I'm probably saying the opposite to their parents or their teachers. So I'm sometimes surprised when I get invited back. But, you know, a lot of kids are encouraged to go to school and go to college and get a safe job, where that's not my thinking at all. The number one priority for me is you should enjoy a good quality of life. And a lot of people are interested in business or entrepreneurship, and that's not taught in our schools. So I think our education system may be falling behind a little bit. You know, something like computer science is not even taught in all secondary schools. Kids, when they're in school, they're being pushed to do leaving certs or whatever and to pass everything, you know, whereas in life in general, you're not going to pass everything. You're going to fail a lot of things. So not to be ashamed of failure and to learn from it and embrace it. So I'm encouraging that kind of thing as well. So to have a more open mind on life in general, really.
You've also said that when it comes to entrepreneurship, people shouldn't worry about what other people think of them.
Yeah, well, it amazes me, and it's not just Irish people, but people the world over are always worried about what other people think or what the neighbours think, you know. And I think it was Oscar Wilde once said, the only thing worse than people talking about you is people not talking about you. So I actually don't care who's talking about me, whether they're laughing about me or whatever. It makes no difference whatsoever, because you do the right thing, you know, have a bit of integrity and try different things. And if they fail, they fail. At least you tried. You know, the important thing is always try.
Sean Brett of Steel Tech Sheds there.